I will now call the second case on today's oral argument calendar. Case number A24-0917, Becker Township versus Minnesota Association of Townships Insurance Trust. I trust that both attorneys are familiar with our standard procedures. Both of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for rebuttal of 5 minutes. So you're aware that our lectern is adjustable in height. There are two buttons at the front edge of the surface, one to go up, one to go down. Feel free to adjust it as you wish at the beginning of your argument. Counsel for appellant, you may approach. Please introduce yourself and your client, and then you may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Marcus Jardine, and I represent MADIT in this matter. We're asking the court today to reverse the district court's denial of MADIT's motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. And I'm going to run through the facts very quickly in this matter because I think they're pretty basic. What's critical to know is that MADIT is a statewide joint powers entity established to provide self-insurance of townships through a pool of funds. And the township, Becker Township, is a member of MADIT. MAT, the Minnesota Association of Townships, is an entirely separate organization from MADIT. That's come up in the briefing several times. It is a separate board of directors. It's a totally separate governing body from the board of trustees on MADIT. There's two governing documents in the case. There's the coverage document and the bylaws. Those are produced in full in the addendum. And there's a mandatory dispute resolution mechanism in the governing documents. And the township, Becker Township, did not follow this dispute resolution process and demanded appraisal. Our position, MADIT's position, was that no right to appraisal had accrued under the contract yet, and that's in essence, here we are. That's a dispute.
Can I follow up on that? You said no right to appraisal under the contract had accrued yet. When would that right accrue?
Your Honor, I would say that the right under the contract would accrue once the dispute resolution process has been followed. So at the current time, MADIT's position is that no covered event has actually occurred on the property. So that means there's no damage, as damage is defined as non-cosmetic damage in the policy.
Similar to the argument made in Quaid, right? That no damage was caused by whatever storm was in the area to this particular property. So there's nothing to submit to appraisal because there's no loss.
Well, Your Honor, I would actually dispute that with Quaid. So in Quaid, there was actually no dispute between the insurer and the insured that there was a covered loss. They actually agreed that there was a hailstorm, for example.
Right. But the argument in there also was no question that the coverage applies, but it had to do what was the cause of the loss being claimed. Isn't that exactly what we have in this circumstance?
Well, I would say it's not, Your Honor, and here's why. So in Quaid, when the insurer asked for the appraisal, the insurer agreed. The insurer said that there was a covered event. There was a hailstorm that caused damage. So the reason why this case is different is when the appraisers come in, they have to have a framework. They can't make coverage decisions. So Quaid says, since we're talking about Quaid says that an appraiser may not construe the policy or decide whether the insurer can pay. And that's exactly how this case is different from Quaid itself. Because the appraisers can't come in and decide whether all the damage on the property falls under an exclusion. That's not their job.
No, but they decide whether it was caused by wear and tear, that's the trust's position in this case, versus caused by the hailstorm. or hail and wind storm,
Your Honor, the difference is that there's, we're not agreeing that there ever was a hailstorm. So there's nothing, there's nothing to initiate the process because we don't even agree to the basic premise that there ever was a hailstorm that caused damage.
I did not get that from your brief. You don't agree that that weather event occurred?
Well, Your Honor, we're not necessarily in dispute. Well, first of all, the record has not been developed because the dispute resolution process has not been followed. So I believe there were camera stills from a security camera that were taken. But, I mean, honestly, Matt's not in a position to say whether or not that storm did occur because, I mean, there's just no, that process, the record has not been developed as part of that dispute resolution process.
But when the claim that was submitted was denied, and it was denied, correct?
Yes.
They provided a reason for denial.
Right.
To the trust. And that reason was, this is wear and tear, it's not hail damage.
Right.
So it seems to me they admitted there was an event that could have potentially caused damage. They were just taking a position. In this case, it did not.
Well, Your Honor, I don't quite see it that way. The way that I read that denial was that there was no damage, as that term is defined in the policy as non-cosmetic damage. It has to be like functional damage. So the reason why I think this case is different is that if Becker followed the dispute resolution process, they could produce evidence of things like broken shingles or ripped off shingles, broken glass, broken AC unit.
Okay, when we talk about the dispute resolution process, I'm confused. I'm looking at the coverage document. I see paragraph H that talks about a right of action against us, and I think that's the dispute resolution process you're talking about. But doesn't M kind of set up, I know it's titled loss conditions, but it sets up kind of a whole different way to resolve issues over the amount of loss, including the provision that if the appraisers selected by the two parties can't agree on a neutral, that you can go to a court to get the neutral umpire point. That seems to me a whole different dispute resolution process. And why isn't that paragraph M the governing contract, if you will, provision for our analysis?
Your Honor, are you referring to the appraisal position?
I'm talking about what you do in the event of a disagreement on the value of the claim or the amount of loss.
Well, aside from what I've already discussed, I would say, Your Honor, that there's not actually been a disagreement on the amount of loss because Mattit is the Board of Trustees. It's not a staff member who disagreed with the coverage determination. It has not actually gone up all the way. There's not been a good faith effort to actually obtain an agreement with Mattit because they haven't gone to the Board of Trustees to get a determination of what Mattit itself, the entity at the Board of Trustees level, says. And that's what the dispute resolution process requires. They can't unilaterally determine that there's a disagreement without going through the dispute resolution process.
Are you done, Judge Rickman? I don't want to cut you off. Going back to Judge Johnson's original question, you know, when would the appraisal occur under your argument, could you just walk us through the steps? So there's denial of coverage, then what happens?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that what initially happened in this case...
I just want to know what you claim to be the correct sequence.
Well, I would say the correct sequence, Your Honor, is like, you mean assuming there's a coverage denial like there was in this case.
Yes.
So I would say there's a coverage denial, and Becker disagrees with that, with that determination. Becker would appeal that determination to the Mattit Board of Trustees.
Under H, following this?
So I'm looking at the addendum in the bylaws, page 28, 12.1, 12.2.
Okay, I'll go there. I was looking at addendum 43, which has paragraph 8.
Well, I believe they overlap in terms of... Yeah.
So they go to Mattit.
Yeah.
And then,
so they go to Mattit. They can present evidence to Mattit. Mattit can look at this issue. And let's say they present evidence of damage, as that is defined under the policy, and then change Mattit's mind that there was, which could happen, right?
Sure.
Which would mean it's a covered event under the policy. Then I believe they would have a right to trigger the appraisal, assuming that Mattit disagreed on the amount of damage at that point, then they can trigger the appraisal process.
So what if Mattit takes a position of that the denial of coverage was correct? Then what?
You mean at the Board of Trustees level?
Yes.
So if Mattit, again, just reaffirms that, then it would go to the Minnesota Association of Townships, which is an entirely separate body. It's not the Board of Trustees, the Board of Directors. And if you look at the bylaws on 12.2, they can consider evidence. They look at it under a de novo standard. And by the way, under the contract, the MAT Board of Directors has the ultimate authority to determine the contract language. So in terms of whether the appraisal provision even applies to this case, it shouldn't even be in a court because the MAT Board of Directors under the contract actually has that discretion.
So it seems to me your argument is premised on this being a coverage dispute as opposed to something else, that by saying we think this your claimed loss is due to wear and tear, not any storm event, that becomes a coverage decision.
That's I think
a
it's a fair way.
Denial as to coverage, not as to a disagreement as the amount of loss claimed.
I think that's a fair way of putting it, Your Honor. It's ultimately a coverage issue, and Mattit's position is that there was no covered loss, so that there was no covered loss at all. Everything falls under a policy exclusion. And I believe the case law is pretty clear that an appraiser does not come in and make factual slash legal determinations about whether that there was a covered loss in the first instance. They're given a framework, right? And that's what I believe, if we go back to Quaid and the Eighth Circuit case, Axis Surplus Insurance Company, if we look at those two cases, I just want to clarify this. So in Quaid, it was undisputed that a windstorm damaged buildings on the farm. So Quaid says that when the parties agree that a covered event happened, the appraiser can then determine what happened on the property. And Axis is very similar. And I would like to turn the court's attention to Zulf Enterprise, before I run out of time here, because I think this case, I want to make sure I get this in, because I think Zulf Enterprises v. State Farm Insurance is this exact issue, Judge Bjorkman, about the difference between the policy determination.
Right, and Zulf, as I recall, there were a whole bunch of coverage issues. Did you provide the required notice of loss? Was there an insurance policy in effect for covering this property at this time? I mean, it, as I recall from the case, and I was involved in it years back, there was more than just the was this claimed loss caused by deterioration versus whatever storm happened in this area. Would you agree with me that Zulf involved a number of other more classic coverage issues?
So what I recall about Zulf is that it wasn't really a class action, but I believe it involved like numerous residential properties or companies that all had properties sort of scattered throughout the metro area. And so I think they were kind of, I guess they were consolidated, is my recollection of the issue. But why I think this case is important is because that case talks about how whether a covered event occurred is more than merely incidental to the determination of the amount of loss. The case actually states that coverage is a threshold requirement to determine the amount of loss. And so in Zulf, the insurer presented weather reports and testimony and evidence that no covered event occurred and that the damage was from inadequate maintenance. And the court actually determined that this was an inappropriate question to put to the appraiser because you don't reach that threshold issue to even get into the coverage dispute unless there is some general agreement that there was a covered loss. So that issue went to the jury, and the jury looked at it, and the jury said, no, there was no covered loss on some of these, so it doesn't get to go to appraisal. And there's absolutely no reason why this case is different. I mean, just like the jury in Zulf could decide whether look at these weather reports and look at this testimony, the dispute resolution process serves essentially the same purpose. Like, there can be evidence presented to Mattit, ultimately MAT, that there was non-cosmetic damage. So if there's a water leak, if there's cracked shingles, if there's broken glass, and that sort of thing, then, yeah, they have a really good argument that there was a covered loss. And then if MATA continues to say, we're going to pay very little or nothing, then that would trigger the appraisal section. And I think that's pretty clear. It would in that circumstance.
Are you conceding there is a loss?
No. No, I would say that
if... Opposed to covered loss, you're saying there's no loss?
I'm saying there's currently no loss. I'm saying that if...
Okay, so this, can I sure. Please look at addendum 49, which is the denial letter, because I mean, the last paragraph on that page begins, since there is no coverage for this loss, which seems to me to acknowledge the existence of a loss. And then if we go up a few paragraphs up where it talks about which exclusions apply, there is no coverage for the following causes of loss, such as wear and tear. It seems, I mean, I read the letter to acknowledge a loss, but to be focused on the cause of the loss, which is, I think, what Judge Bjorkman said earlier in asking you a question. Am I wrong in that interpretation of the letter?
Your Honor, I just ran out of time. Can I finish the... Okay. So I would just turn your attention, Judge Johnson, to the definition section at the bottom of that first page.
And I know it discusses both damage and loss, but the portions I just pointed out talk about this loss. They talk about causes of loss.
Well, I think if you look at what actually happened, they didn't pay out anything. And then in the definitions section, it talks about damage does not include cosmetic appearance differences. That's in the letter with undamaged portions of policy. Loss means actual physical damage to covered property. Loss does not include cosmetic appearance differences with undamaged. So I think by virtue of quoting this definition provision, I believe that it's clear from this letter that MATA is saying that there was no damage as that's defined in the policy.
I guess before you sit down, I mean, other judges may have questions as well, but there's one I want to go back to paragraph M, which is the what I would describe as the contractual provision for an appraisal. Is it true that paragraph M, the right to, I mean, it says in the second line of paragraph B, either party may initiate an appraisal process by written demand. Does that right to initiate an appraisal exist in every case, of a denial or not? Because at the beginning of your argument, you said there was this right did not accrue yet. And I'm just wondering if it's solely a matter of time. In other words, it's not at this point in time or at this point in the process, the right hasn't accrued, but it will at a later point in time. Or are you taking the position that for this claim, it could be that the township never has a right to initiate an appraisal pursuant to paragraph M?
I'd say it's the former. I do think that the appraisal provision could kick in. And that's if Becker went to the MATIT Board of Trustees and presented the evidence that they're talking about, and it's like undeniable evidence that they, and then it goes to the MAT board, or let's say the MAT the MATIT Board of Trustees denied and then went to the MAT Board of Directors. I mean, they would have to look at that evidence and come up with a very good reason why it's not a couple. Like if you're looking at a hail damage, for example, I'm not saying this actually it occurs, but let's say there's hail damage and an AC unit doesn't work, or there's cracked shingles. I mean, I think that there would be a pretty tough time for the MATIT Board of Trustees or the MAT Board of Directors to look at that and say, that's not damage. So I think that if that happened and then we continued, MATIT continued to say that there was no we're not going to pay anything, I think then they can demand appraisal.
I have one more. Go ahead, Judge Holdridge. Well, maybe I'll follow up on my prior question, but I'll give both other judges full opportunity. But I guess my question, maybe I'm pivoting a little bit. I want to make sure I understand what issues need to be decided in this appeal. Are you asking us to decide whether the township has a contractual right to an appraisal pursuant to M in this appeal? Is that an issue we must resolve?
I think the only issue the court needs to decide is whether it has discretion to even be looking at this contract, if it has subject matter jurisdiction, because...
Let's assume we have subject matter jurisdiction. Then do we need to decide that issue about a contractual right to appraisal?
If we're working on the assumption that you have subject matter jurisdiction, I personally think that's the only issue in this case. I didn't even talk about the statute. If the court wants me to address it in my rebuttal, I can, but I don't think that statute applies. I'm more than happy to walk through that in my
rebuttal.
You've
briefed it. That's fine.
Okay.
But I guess here's what I'm wondering is, paragraph H on the prior page of the addendum, page 43, says no legal action may be brought against us. In your brief, you clarify that us means the trust, not the association.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, I should continue, as a result of any dispute with respect to this coverage document or any of its terms and conditions. So I guess what I'm wondering is, are you taking the position, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, I'm just wondering, are you taking the position that the dispute about M cannot be resolved in this lawsuit against the trust because of paragraph H?
That no lawsuit may be taken against us? Because is that provision that you mentioned there? Is that what you mean? Yes, I would say that provision applies. I think that's one of the reasons. I think there's multiple reasons in the contract, but I do think that's one of them.
Okay, Judge Halbers.
Just to try to tie up for me this, when and where is an appraisal appropriate? Based on your response to Judge Johnson, you talked about if Matt ultimately determined, that they should go forward and be able to do that. But let's say Matt just reaffirms what Mabbitt did.
Yep.
It seems to me that it's closed because they're Matt's decision, final binding, according to paragraph H, and there would be absolutely no opportunity for appraisal under that sequence. Am I correct?
Well, I mean, I think that's how the contract language reads. I think you're correct about that. But I would just add that in every contract, including every insurance contract, there is an obligation of good faith and fair dealing. And so my position would be that if there was very obvious physical damage and it goes all the way up to Matt and Matt's like, oh, that those broken shingles, that's not damage. I mean, I think I'm pretty confident that they would have a claim that would violate. So I don't agree with the fact that this is like illusory or that there's, I'm not sure that's what you were getting at, but... I think that there is a way eventually to get this into court if they want to. Is that kind of what you were getting at, or?
Well, in part, but I actually don't see that route as it's outlined in this document. And maybe that's what parties agreed to going in, and so they know that. But kind of like agreeing to arbitration and not a trial ultimately. But so.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jardine. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal, which means, of course, the judges will have another opportunity to ask you questions. Counsel for respondent, please identify yourself and your client, and then you may begin your argument.
Good morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel, and may it please the court. My name is Jordan Vassell, and I represent the respondent in this case, Becker Township. Your Honors, Mattitt argues that the Matt Board has unrestricted authority to draft, enforce, and interpret a contract however it wants. But all authority has its limits. And the Matt Board lacks the authority to manufacture an alternative definition of amount of loss that spits in the face of over a decade's worth of Supreme Court precedent.
Can I stop you just a minute? You said Matt Board, which sounds to me like the Association Board. Do you mean Mattitt or Matt? We have these two terms.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the Matt Board is the board that allegedly has the interpretive authority. The Mattitt Board of Trustees is the one that drafted the contract, and then Mattitt is the party that Becker's been dealing with at this point. But the contract itself plainly states that in the event of a disagreement on the value of the claim or the amount of loss, either party may initiate appraisal by written demand on the other. Each party shall select an appraiser, and those appraisers shall select the umpire. What this language means is if one party initiates appraisal, it is compulsory on the other. It's mandatory. In this case, Becker demanded appraisal and Mattett refused, and that is a breach of the contract.
Counsel argues that yes, this is about amount of loss, but this is really an issue about what coverage is available. And because it's a denial of coverage, it is something that falls in the paragraph H bucket and would not follow Quaid and the other case law that you've just referred to. How do you respond to that argument that this really is about a denial of coverage that is not supposed to be decided by appraisers?
Yes, Your Honor, this is a textbook case of an amount of loss dispute. Now, of course, that begs the question, what does the amount of loss mean? As the court opined in Quaid versus Secure Insurance Company, amount of loss is the financial cost necessary to repair the damage from the loss. And this necessarily encompasses a determination on the cause or the source of the loss. I'd like to clarify what actually happened in Quaid, because opposing counsel said that everyone agreed that there was a storm and that the storm damaged some of the buildings. That's not exactly what happened. In Quaid, there was some agreement that a storm occurred, but the actual core of the dispute centered on three of those buildings. In those three buildings, the insurer claimed were damaged due to continual deterioration over a period of time rather than a specific storm occurrence. So certainly they agreed that a storm occurred, but their argument was that the storm did not damage the building, that it was an exclusion, because under that particular policy, there was an exclusion for inadequate maintenance.
Did the trust acknowledge there was a storm event, a covered event in this case?
Your Honor, I don't believe they ever explicitly stated that, yes, there was a storm, but they also never explicitly stated that no storm occurred. And I think the language of their denial, where they say this loss is not covered, and we say that this loss is, that is why it's a dispute on the amount of loss, and that's why it should be determined by appraisal. Similarly, this case also mirrors what happened in AXA Surplus Insurance Company versus Condo Corporation. Now, the difference there is the issue was whether the damage was pre-existing damage or whether it was the result of a storm. But again, that's an amount of loss dispute because the question is, what is the source of the damage? And as the court explained in Quaid, when there's a dispute on the amount of loss, a determination of causation is incidental to that determination.
I understand your discussion about the law. It strikes me that the terms of this particular coverage document are a little different. I mean, I don't know that the insurance policies that was the State Farm or whatever, the Secura Insurance Company and the other cases, has this paragraph H about, you know, this sort of you have to go through this process of coming to the trust and coming to the MAT board to make these determinations before you get to go to an appraisal. How do we square the case law with an insurance coverage document that seems to be a little bit different here?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that requires us to sort of look at what the appraisal process is for. Generally speaking, appraisal is used in insurance disputes for hail or fire claims to resolve the factual issues or the amount of loss. And generally speaking, the courts will determine coverage disputes. What does the policy mean? Does what actually happened fall under an exclusion or not? So in this particular contract, it is different, but the implication is the same. In this instance, the Mattett Board of Trustees, the Mattett Board of Directors sort of operates as the court with regards to coverage issues, but the appraisal panel acts like it would in any other insurance contract and deals with factual questions on the amount of loss and the cause or the source of the damage. Now, next, I'd like to draw the court's attention to the Zolf case because there is some sort of misclarification on that. Now, in that case, initially, there was a submission of 10 properties that the insured believed suffered as a result of the covered event. However, in response, the insurer approved 3 of those buildings, but the other 7, they denied them. In doing so, they cited several reasons, including, one, that the storm did not damage several of the properties, the insured did not respond to inquiries regarding the claim for one property, the cost of repairs at another property did not exceed the deductible, and one mixed-use property was not insured on the date of the storm. Now, the insurer, submitted these to the insured, but the insured did not respond. The insured did not dispute that. There was no fight on whether or not this was a valid basis to deny coverage, and that's why the outcome was different. In the absence of an amount of loss dispute, an assessment of the cause or the source of the loss is not incidental. It's a core issue of the case. And that's the difference between this case and Quaid. In Quaid, there was a clear, unequivocal dispute on the amount of loss, so an assessment of the source or cause of the damage is not a core issue, making it a mixed question of fact or law. It's a question that's appropriate for the appraisal panel to determine. But in Zolf, that did not exist, and that is why the outcome of that case differs from the other two. Next, I'd like to turn to the alleged dispute resolution provision in the contract. Now, as the court is aware, it does state that any dispute can be brought by you by written petition to the Mattett Board of Trustees. Now, first off, that is not mandatory. It says that a dispute can be brought. It does not say that a dispute must be brought, that it's required to be brought. It's permissive. And the other issue with this, and why it's not a valid condition precedent, is there's no sequential language. And for an example of this, I'd like to draw the court's attention to a couple of cases. For instance, in Turner Excavation Company, the issue was whether or not a claim should have been submitted to mediation and potentially arbitration as opposed to dealt with by the court. And the language in that case was, any claim shall be subject to mediation as a condition precedent to arbitration. Any claim shall be subject to arbitration. The court in that case found that this language was valid because the bulk of the specific terms put the party on notice. In contrast here, there are not specific terms. It does not state that it's a condition precedent to appraisal. It does not state that it's required before appraisal. It doesn't mention any other provision in the contract at all because it's an entirely separate process for an entirely different type of dispute that we don't have here. Similarly, in the Writing Assistance Incorporated case, the language at issue stated that if a dispute arises related to this agreement, the parties endeavor to first settle the dispute with mediation before resorting to arbitration. Then any dispute still not resolved shall be resolved by arbitration. Again, you have specific mandatory language that outlines a sequence of events that must be taken place before any other action can occur. The final support that I want to discuss is the Mattett Board of Trustees and their process. Now, if you look at the bylaws, section 12.1 talks about the Mattett Board of Trustees' authority, but it doesn't actually outline a process, and neither does the coverage document. So in October of 2022, there was a board meeting where they discussed this, and I believe this is in the record doc number 9, and it's on page 43, I believe, and it's the board meeting minutes for that event. They realized that there was no procedure, and so they wanted to outline one. So they voted on one, they drafted it, and it was approved by the board. And one of the provisions of that, specifically A7B, states that the decision of the Board of Trustees shall not consider the cost of the claim, but rather the intent of the coverage documents / policy. That means that if you'd appeal the decision to the Mattett Board of Trustees, they're not even assessing the amount of loss. It only exists to interpret the contract, to interpret the coverage terms and conditions, but the amount of loss is an issue that has always been reserved for an appraisal panel. And that's what should happen here. And with that, unless the court has any other questions, I will yield the rest of my time.
I have a question or two, and that is, I'm going to jump just a minute to the issue of a statutory right to appraisal. I think in your brief, you narrowed the issue slightly by agreeing that the definition of insurance company does not include the trust, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And so the only way that that there could be a statutory right is could you explain your argument about if you continue to pursue a statutory right to appraisal, how does that exist?
Yes, Your Honor. First and foremost, regardless of whether or not the statutory right exists, the contract right does. I want to make that perfectly clear. But in terms of the statutory right, it is true that 65A.26, the definition of company is not included. Excuse me, joint powers entities are not included in that definition. But it says company, however organized. And then in 47.1.982, that talks about self-insurance pools, it lists three exemptions. It specifically states that self-insurance pools established and open for enrollment on a statewide basis are exempt from the requirements of this section in Section 65B.48, Subdivision 3, in 60A.0811. Now, in their brief, opposing counsel argues that this is a complete and total exemption from all insurance statutes. But there's two things to note. One, that this says it's that they are exempt from the requirements. So the only the requirements, only demands, not the authority, not the purview, only the requirements. And then second, it lists three specific sections. And if we look at that those sections, we see what they're exempt from. 471.982 has pool formation and reporting requirements. Self-insurance pools are not subject to those requirements because their formation process is different. 65B.48 has to do with security requirements, and 60A.0811 has to do with the requirement to pay interest. These are the exemptions that they have, and that is it.
Do we need to look at the exemptions if we have concluded that that the trust is not an insurance company under the definitions in 60A?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, but if the court looks at the term, even if it's not an insurance company, which, again, we are not conceding, it says company, however organized. And this is a company, these are entities, and the legislator did not have to but chose to put however organized in there. Plus, the further support for the statutory right is the fact that there's an appraisal provision in the policy to begin with. Clearly, Matt does not want to go with appraisal, but they put it in the policy because the statute requires it. Not only that, the actual language of that policy mirrors exactly what's required by 65.26.
Now, I'd like to go back to your argument about what I would call a contractual right to an appraisal, which I think is maybe your main emphasis now on appeal.
Correct, Your Honor.
But when I look at your memorandum of law that you submitted to the district court on February 19, 2024, in support of your motion, I have a hard time finding argument in your motion memorandum about a contractual right. The motion seems to be almost exclusively concerned with, maybe even exclusively concerned with, a statutory right to appraisal. I mean, I don't know if you've reviewed it recently, but I'm wondering was this issue even presented to the district court?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't recall which brief exactly because we submitted three, but I do believe in the second, if not the third brief submitted on this issue, there were arguments about the policy and how the policy has a contractual right to appraisal. And that is the focus of the argument before the court today because further analysis makes it very clear an inclusion with the Matit Board of Trustees provisions required for for review, that a decision on the amount of loss is reserved for appraisal. That is what the appraisal panel has the authority to do. Matit has the authority to review coverage document terms and conditions, but only this court has the authority to affirm the district court's decision, and that's exactly what it should do. Thank you.
It appears there are no further questions for you from the panel. Thank you very much, Mr. Bassel. Mr. Jardine, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal.
So I'd just like to start with a few comments that were made by opposing counsel, and one of them is this contention that the dispute resolution process is permissive and it's not mandatory. I think it's pretty clear when you look at the coverage documents as a whole is that the language says may because there's no, the parties, no one's forcing them to appeal it. They may appeal. That's to me the common sense language about what that means. They may appeal, and then when you consider the coverage document in conjunction with that, and it says that the MAT Board of Directors shall have the sole, exclusive, and final authority to interpret coverage document terms and conditions, there's not much permissive about that. So I would...
In what way would the appraisers be interpreting coverage documents, terms, and conditions?
Well, preliminary matter, I believe that one of the terms and conditions of the contract is what constitutes a disagreement in the appraisal clause. We've argued in the briefs and I argued on the initial argument, is that whether the appraisal clause itself applies is a decision that is within the sole discretion of the MAT Board of Directors, because whether there's a disagreement or not here or not is not actually clear, right? Because the MAT Board of Trustees has not actually even looked at this, and they're the Board of Trustees, that's MATIT, and they haven't even reviewed this yet. So I would say that in terms of what, an appraiser can't look at that. I mean, that's something that has to, that's a legal issue that has to be decided. And under the dispute resolution mechanisms, the MAT Board of Directors looks at the policy language and our de novo standard of review, and they would decide whether that there's a disagreement.
Can I just clarify, because when you say MATIT hasn't looked at this yet, I mean, is it MATIT the entity that denied the claim?
A staff member did, but
it, right, but that's MATIT.
Right, but so I would say that
it can't look at it, and at least according to the letter, said that it was wear and tear as a cause for the damage. So I don't think it's accurate to say they didn't look at it.
Well, Your Honor, I'll clarify. I mean, I think, yes, a staff member looked at it, but what the point that I'm trying to make is that if it goes to, when we're looking at what it means for there to be a disagreement, I believe that that means, and it's not for me to decide, that's for the MAT Board of Directors to decide, but I believe that that means there has to be a good faith attempt to seek agreement, and that would mean going to the highest level of MAT, which is the Board of Trustees, and they didn't do that. And so, I mean, there might be a valid dispute about whether that's accurate or not, but what I'm saying is that the MAT Board of Directors, they get to make that determination, not the court. And I would like to point out one thing about the Zulf case. And I just want to reiterate that I believe that the Zulf case is on all fours with this case, because I'm going to read a passage from it that I think is important. The question whether a covered event, wind or hail, occurred on each of Ali's properties is more than merely incidental to the determination of the amount of loss. Unlike the insurer in Quaid, State Farm disputed whether a storm producing damaging wind or hail struck certain of Ali's properties at all. I mean, that is precisely what this case is.
Yeah, but I'm looking at the denial letter, and I've gone back to it. And in its first paragraph, the claim was presented to the trust for possible damages to the town hall due to hail storms. And there's no indication in the letter that there was any dispute as to whether there were, in fact, hail and storms that affected the town hall building. The denial just focuses on the cause of loss. That seems to me to be a pretty significant distinction between this case and Zulf. Why am I wrong about that?
Your Honor, I'm just going to go to the sorry, I just turned to it. This is the coverage letter.
I'm looking at the July 8th, 2022
yep.
denial
that's what
of
I have.
The claim. And it says in the first, I mean, it links this claim to the town hall and hail and storms that affected the town hall. It doesn't seem to be any dispute that there were, in fact, hail and storms. The only issue is whether there was damages that it resulted. That seems to me different than how you've presented at least some of the claims that were floating around in Zulf.
Your Honor, I would say that I honestly don't know the answer to that. I don't know if MATIT contested the storms, and that's another reason why I would say that the record was not adequately developed. I mean, that's another reason why I think that this should have gone to the Board of Trustees, so that issue could have been better developed before breach of contract action went into the court to decide this issue without adequate evidence or documentation to support either side.
Mr. Jardine, you make arguments about condition precedent and about exhaustion of remedies. Are those two arguments two different theories to address the same thing or the same underlying basis, or are they two arguments that are based on different premises?
Your Honor, I think you fairly summarized what we're going after with those two theories. They're trying to accomplish the same thing. I would say the conditions precedent argument is essentially saying that this the contract dispute's not ripe for judicial review yet because the conditions precedent under the contract have not been met yet. So,
and what are those conditions, just to be clear?
The conditions?
Yeah, what is the condition that is precedent to that?
Oh, the condition that's precedent would be to go to the MATIT Board of Trustees to determine whether there is coverage for this. And then ultimately, if there's disagreement there, they would need to go to the MATIT Board of Directors. And then, you know, assuming that there is a disagreement at that point about, if there is a disagreement about coverage, then that would, that could trigger the appraisal process ultimately. But those are the steps that someone would have to take before they would get into court. They would have to go all the way to the MATIT Board of Directors.
And the remedies that need to be exhausted are the same, or is there something different?
Your Honor, no, I think that they substantially overlap. I would agree with that. That the remedies they would have to seek, the administrative remedies, are the exact same.
It appears there's no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Jardine. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments in a difficult case. The appeal is now submitted. The court will issue its opinion in writing within 90 days.